Hey, everybody. This is Doug Robertson of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution with another edition of the Southern Fried Soccer Podcast. It is April 15th, and on Sunday, Master Sunday, Atlanta United turned a birdie into a bogey by giving up two goals and ending with a 2-2 draw against Philadelphia at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It was Atlanta United's first draw in four home matches. It broke their three-game winning streak. It was particularly galling because Atlanta United was playing without several starters, including Yorgo Shakamaki, Steen Gregerson, John De Silva, Derek Williams, and played well. Got the two goals, the first from Daniel Rios, the ninth from an Atlanta United striker this season, which is a stunning number. And then Caleb Wiley hit a what would be called a Tiger Woods stinger for a goal from about 30 yards, took one hop and went to the left corner. But then, as has been the case the past season, Atlanta United kind of switched off twice to give up two goals, and we're going to get into that in just a little bit. You're going to hear from manager Gonzalo Pineda and Wiley. We'll go through some stats from the match, and then I'll answer your many, many questions, including the infamous throw-in. If this is your first time listening to us, please make sure to follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
The AJC's trusted veteran political voices, Greg Bluestein, Patricia Murphy, Tia Mitchell, and Bill Nigut are the essential source for Georgia politics. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Politically Georgia. Sign up for the newsletter, download the podcast, subscribe to the AJC.
And we're back. We're going to get into audio now with Gonzalo Pineda and Caleb Wiley. Wanted to know from Pineda if this was a frustrating match.
Well, it's obvious you're winning 2-0 at home, playing very good. Creating a lot of chances. I think the team was very solid also defensively, and then we give up two silly goals, I would say. So then, of course, it's frustrating because we deserve to play to win tonight, and we didn't. So it's frustrating, but the important thing is after the frustration, after all of that, we learned about it, and then next time we're better.
Now, you heard him describe silly goals. So on the first goal, Edwin Mosquera, and this is not blaming Mosquera, this is simply a descriptor, came from the right to the left to do some pressing, press the guy, they won the ball, and then Mosquera cleared it to the other side of the field, which is kind of a tactic Atlanta United likes to do. They want to switch fields quickly. But when he cleared it, there was nobody there. Brad Guzan tried to come out to get the ball. It was about 30 yards from goal, realized that Philadelphia player was going to get there first. He did. And then he had the angle, and he took a tight angle, a really good shot, to make it 2-1. Then on the second goal, Atlanta, this was around the 74th minute, I think it was, Philadelphia's second goal, Atlanta United was pressing Philadelphia's backup goalkeeper. Andre Blake had to leave just before halftime. The backup goalkeeper came in. They shouldn't have been pressing the goalkeeper. This guy, he had no desire to play out of the back. He was just booting long balls. So in pressing the goalkeeper, Atlanta United got stretched. The ball was played to the center of the pitch where Bartek Slice should have been, but he was up the field trying to press along with his teammates, trying to keep coordination. The ball got played into the kind of, if you're looking at a diagram of the field and Atlanta United's goal, Brad Guzan's goal is at the top, kind of played into the top right corner. Caleb Wiley defended it, pushed it out of bounds. There was a long throw in. Caleb Wiley headed it from around the corner of the 6-yard box to the top of the 18-yard box. Mosquera was slow to close down the Philadelphia scorer. Guy took a right-footed volley, sliced it into the top left corner. Another really good shot, 2-2. Here's Pineda talking about what he attributes the goals allowed to.
Well, it happens. It's little moments of lack of concentration. We were very focused, even the moments that we had a little mistake in the build-up or something. We always corrected that, especially in the first half. There were a couple good actions in our own box where we defend really well. But in this one, it felt like there were critical mistakes and no time to react. probably. So we know the type of game was in front of us, a game where we were trying to look for the game, to look to create chances, and the other team trying to destroy our attacks and then counter or hitting in transition or set pieces or throwings. That was the game. We knew that since the beginning of the week. We were prepared for that, but then in little moments after the 70th minute, we lost control.
Now, Atlanta United will host Cincinnati on Saturday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's the third of four home matches. Philadelphia's was the first. So I was curious if Giakoumakis and Gregerson are going to return to training this week, because the timelines say they should.
We're going to see next week. I would say Gigi is a bit closer than anyone else, but we will see. Of course, we have to see how his knee is responding. And yeah, Stian is doing very good. And we will see if he can do a little bit more this week. We will evaluate throughout the week, and then we will make decisions.
And then Beneta talked about kind of game management, and I was curious to know if the team had worked on some of the specific situations they faced against Philadelphia, particularly on those two goals.
Yeah, I think it's more management of the game and see the film and understand the moments of the game. It's really hard in a session trying to replicate the same action in the same minute, right? It's more addressing them, and it was actually the lead by one. It was the second goal. So even more, like, especially, again, when we are winning at home, I want the mentality of the team is always trying to score the next goal and the next goal. And I think we did that, actually. That's why we started to have the advantage by two goals, because we continue going forward, trying to be proactive at attacking, and we never stop. It's in those moments where we know what type of opponent is. The goalkeeper, no chance he's going to play out from the back. He was kicking the ball no matter what. So we don't need to press them. Nick Firmino needs to recover. Bartek being next to Tristan Mujumba. They win the first header and the second ball goes on the space next to Mujumba. And we can affect that play better. Normally throughout the game, we were very good on that. But that little moment, we were not. And again, those are the things we need to reflect on, how we manage those situations. Because for me, this was kind of a playoff game. It was a game against an opponent that is understand how to play these type of games.
You always know that the players are frustrated when you get into the locker room and there's very few people there. Pineda's press conference did not take long. When we got to the locker room, there were very few players there. Caleb Wiley was one. Here he is talking about the goal he scored.
Not used to scoring those, but the ball came out. You know, there was a similar play in the first half where it kind of came out to me. Thiago played it into space, and I kind of took a touch and then took it, played it out of bounds to Tyler. But this time I saw the chance to take my shot, take the opportunity to hit it, and went in the back of the net, which was nice. Nice feeling.
His feelings about the draw?
It's one of those draws that feels like a loss, to be honest. When you create so many chances and you feel like you're honestly the better team, it feels like a loss. I think towards the end, it's something that we have to work on is, once around the 80th, 90th minute, we have to, keep, our concentration and focus. And I think this game, we kind of, we didn't have that focus towards the end of the game. And, it's something that, we've seen in the past year. So I think just remembering that, we got to finish out the game, fully concentrated. But we'll work on that.
And I was curious if he thought it felt a little bit like last season with switching off and dropping points.
Yeah, but it's just it's a different feeling. I mean, with these guys, because I know that this is we'll bounce back from this. And I know that that next week against Cincinnati, a very similar side, we'll be a lot better, and we'll be around that time, the 80th, 90th extra time, we'll be a lot, locked in more. So, yeah.
When we come back, we're going to get in the mailbag. Follow me on Twitter at Doug Robertson AJC and on Facebook at Atlanta United News Now. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
I'm Ernie Suggs.
And I'm Ned Ravone. Atlanta has been known as the Black Mecca for so many years, but that means something different to everybody.
It means everything to me. Every day I wake up, I learn something new.
Well, you all can learn something new by subscribing to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's new newsletter called Unapologetically ATL. It's all about the people, the events, and the entertainment happening in Metro Atlanta that Black people might want to know about.
So subscribe today at www.ajc.com/unapologeticallyATL.
I want to remind y'all that after every Atlanta United match, we have two pages of coverage in the e-edition or print edition of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. It's really well done by our copy desk. I want to thank them. We had, I think, 8 pages of Masters coverage in today's e-edition. It's really worth the couple of bucks a week to get, because you get not only all your information about Atlanta United, but anything else that's going on in Georgia, sports, politics, culture, your local news. We are covering it and covering it very, very well. It's good to be informed. Even if you don't sometimes like what you're reading or like the opinions, it's good to get that information to either strengthen your opinion or maybe to, open your mind a little bit, either way you want it to go. All right, we're going to get into the mailbag now. Patrick and Michael and Eric and many, many, many people ask me about this. On Philly's second goal, it started with a throw-in where the player placed a full foot on the field. Because it led to a goal, was this a potentially reviewable call? So John Nelson and I, as we were waiting to get into the interview room, went through the MLS rules on what could be reviewed and the IFAB rules on what could be reviewed. And a bad throw-in does not fall into a reviewable situation on a goal. It is part of the build-up to a goal, but it is not a foul. It is not a ball crossing the line. It is an infraction. Therefore, it does not fall into the rules. Now, Philadelphia supporters and I got into it a little bit on Twitter because the first guy to clap at me was kind of a jerk, and I do not react well to people who are jerks. Anybody who knows me can tell you that, particularly drivers. I just don't like the arrogance. His foot was over the line. It's very, very close, but you could see green in between the player's heel and the line. So it was a bad throw, but it's not a reviewable call. So it really doesn't matter. There's no sense in wasting the energy on this. So it was not reviewable. On to Cheryl, who says, should the team be happy with the result considering it was missing 5 starters while Thierry was a backup in scoring, or what? No. Had they come back from 2 goals down to get a draw, yeah, that'd be a great result, I think, for the team. But dropping 2 goals and dropping 3 points and only getting 1 is not a good result, particularly when it has not done well on the road so far. So it's dropping points there, too. You can't drop points at home. Now it's going to have to do better on the road to make up those points that it just lost. It dropped it from 3rd to 6th in the East. It wants to finish top 4. Beating Philadelphia would have been a good feather in the cap, particularly, as you said, missing all the players that it was missing. And then Cheryl continues, does MLS or Atlanta United ever reveal the actual attendance? No, no team does. It's always actual attendance, which is tickets sold and distributed to charities and other functions. We used to be able to get it. You could file a Freedom of Information Act and get actual turnstile counts, but we haven't done that in years. It just... unless the numbers seem really, really out of whack to what your eyeballs are seeing, it really just doesn't seem like it's worth the effort and the time. And at least with Atlanta United, the eyeballs, you know, they're close to what the announced attendance typically is. David says, I thought the team played very well, even with all the lineup turnover yesterday. He continues, I am generally okay with 1 point, considering that even though it felt like we gave 2 away at 1 point. But the team clearly seems more comfortable with Philadelphia in the last 3 matches they have played. What tactically, strategically is Pineda doing last year and this year that are allowing the team to control play versus, he calls Philadelphia thugs, I'm not going to call them thugs, so much better than in the past? It's just experience. You know, consistency in the lineup, chemistry, guys play together, they figure things out, they know what to do against certain formations. Philadelphia is an older team, it's an experienced team, but it's a slow team. So it relies on set pieces and physicality to kind of overcome that weakness, and that's good coaching. You work with what you got, and this is what Curtin has got, and he's a very, very good coach. Mark says, I can't help but think of recent form looking similar to last year, where the team starts slow in the first half and then shows up in the second half. Although it gave up some suspect goals in the second half, the attack looked much better. It really did. The second half, Atlanta United really, really pushed it to Philadelphia until it got to those last 20 minutes. And then it mentally, I don't know, got overconfident or lost confidence or something to do with confidence, but they just kind of did not look good anymore. Mark says, Am I looking at this team with unrealistic expectations, or should it be playing better overall given this roster? Well, considering how many guys were out last night, I think getting a draw, you know, even going up the 2 goals, it's not the worst result. Obviously, a loss would have been the worst result. But to get 2 goals with your third string striker. You know, I'm not going to call Tyler Wolfe a second string winger. I think really he's co number one with John De Silva. Silva's not having that great of a season. It's not a bad result. You've got your two backup center backs in, neither of whom were at fault on the goal yesterday. I thought both played well. Mark continues, it seems oftentimes the team gives up goals off inexcusable turnovers, such as the first goal. I know the stats would suggest that our passing completion rate is typically plus 90, but I am overly critical of turnover passes even when there isn't a direct defensive play against our player who does it. Turnovers directly affect our fluidity given that we are a high possession team. Frustrated with a draw on the road and at home. Yeah, we didn't get to talk to Mosquera. He was in the locker room, but I was trying to get other people to ask about hitting that pass. But I assume if you watch Atlanta United, Almada does these all the time, these big switches across the field. I think Mosquera assumed that Brooks Lennon or one of the center backs or maybe Mayamba or Bartok were going to be over there, but there was nobody. It was a weird play, obviously not done intentionally, and Philadelphia took advantage. Nick says, I have two thoughts on today's match. First, the performance was much improved from past performances against pressing teams. Second, Nick says, I want to give you, being me, your flowers for correctly saying that Guzan wasn't done as the starter. Personally, I was skeptical and many other fans were much harsher than that, but Guzan has been very good to start the season and deserves credit. Thanks as always for your coverage. Well, thank you, Nick. When you're around the team as much as I am and cover the team as much as I do, you get a vibe and you get a feel and you get an understanding for how managers think and what you're seeing with the players when they're coming back from injuries and things. And to me, Guzan was going to start. There was no doubt he was going to start. I know a lot of people were blaming Guzan for a lot of the errors last season, but I kept explaining on the podcast over and over again, they weren't all on Guzan. The team gave up a lot of big, high percentage chances, and that's not Guzan. That's the players ahead of him. And there's not a lot of goalkeepers that are going to stop a lot of those shots. And Guzan comes back. He's come back. He looks great. He's moving well. His passing is tremendous. And he kept Atlanta United in that game. He made a couple of big saves. Fletcher says, I've got two questions about Pineda's tactics. First, I've noticed the last couple of games that our strikers get subbed out immediately after scoring a goal. It happened with both Jamal and Rios in this game. Is this something intentional or has it just worked out this way the past couple of games? It's a coincidence. Jamal was injured is why he got subbed out. He just happened to score with his last touch of the game. Rios hadn't really, this was his first full week of training with the team. He missed the previous 2 weeks for what I think was a neck injury or something. It was his first start. He was not going to go 90. They had agreed ahead of time that he would, you know, go between 60 or 70, depending upon how the game went. And he scored with what I think was his last touch. So it's just a coincidence. If Rios starts again on Saturday, and that'll depend upon if Giacomakis returns to training this week, he'll go longer because he'll have more endurance and more time with the team. Fletcher continues, do you think it's fair to say that Pineda was outcoached this game? His substitutions did not make as big of an impact as Curtin's. Why do you think we didn't see a sub after Philly's first goal or especially after their second? It was clear after the first and especially after the second that the momentum was with Philly. Do you think of someone like Dax or someone with that level of experience could have helped the team? I was curious that Dax didn't come in, but at the same time, both the goals were just weird. It wasn't like Philadelphia sliced through Atlanta United. It was weird plays, odd plays. And, you know, there's not a whole lot that you could do with substitutions. The guys were playing, the team was playing well, I thought. Pineda obviously thought so too. It was curious that he didn't bring Dax in, but I think the second goal was such a shocker that at that point, bringing Dax in doesn't really help because Dax isn't going to provide much for offense. And Atlanta United wanted another goal. They wanted to get the 3 points. Ashley says, with the MLS refs back in action, has there been any updates on implementing the new rules for game management they spoke at the beginning of the season? I think it was related to going down for injury. You need to stay off the field for 3 minutes. I think it's actually 2 minutes. And penalty for delay of games or subbing delays, or are they already started doing that? I don't think Atlanta United just had a situation where they've had a trainer come out and look at a player, and then the player went back in and had to sit out for a couple of minutes. So I need to research that. John says he's got a few questions. Thanks for all the great coverage. You're welcome. I never miss a podcast episode, and your work covering the team helps me stay connected. Well, that's the point, John, and I'm glad that you feel connected through the coverage. He says, I'm heading home now from the disappointing draw. Given all the chances against a good Philadelphia team, I guess I should take the point happily, but it sure stings. I have two mailbag questions, not directly related to today's match, but I'd love to hear your takes whenever there's a so mailbag. Well, I'm going to go ahead and get to them. What's your take on the long throw-in as a tactic? I don't recall the Stripes ever doing it, although Philly did it a few times. Seems like a low percentage option because the ball loops so much, but it does also seem to turn a routine throw-in into a minor set piece and hence a scoring opportunity. I wonder why more teams don't try it, including Atlanta United. They used to do it. Gutman used to be a long throw-in guy. They really haven't had that player. If you wanted to bring Derek Williams up, he could probably do it. He's got long arms. Or Noah Cobb, he's got long arms. But then you lose that weapon on the other end of the set piece. I like long throw-ins. When I first started watching the Premier League, when it was available on TV, I would watch Stoke City because of Rory Delap. He was like the king of the long throw-in because it does create a set piece. I mean, the closer the ball can get to the goal, the higher the percentage of chances you're going to score. And if you could do that with a throw-in, that's all the better. That's why I don't understand short corner kicks. It's like, go ahead, put the ball in the box and see what happens. He continues, everyone says it's really tough to win on the road in Major League Soccer. Do you have any thoughts why this is compared to other leagues? If you're talking about American sports leagues, I don't. European leagues, that, you know, the travel is a big part. There's not a whole lot of other leagues around the world other than maybe Russia that have the difference in temperature changes and travel times as does Major League Soccer. I'm just talking regular teams. It just doesn't exist. And travel takes it out of you. Anybody who's been on a plane for 4 hours going from, or 5 hours going from Miami to Vancouver, 7 hours, knows that it just, you don't feel the same. It takes a bit. And then you've got all the different surfaces that you're playing on, grass and turf, different pitch sizes. It's a new, still a new league. It's in his whatever, however, 28th year, 29th year, whatever it is. Still a new league, and you have a lot of roster turnover because of salary cap, and so that's all in effect. Those are some of the reasons. And he says, lastly, I also support Liverpool. What a tough week. You're telling me, my man. On the plus side, he's headed to London this week and will attend both the Fulham and West Ham matches. That is so cool, and I'm very, very happy for you. I have yet to go to a game in England. It's on my bucket list of things to do. I tried to go last summer, but the tickets were just way too expensive, even for teams that had nothing to play for. But it's on my list. Hopefully, the day I retire, I'll fly over to London and go attend a couple of weeks worth of matches. Yes, up the Reds. Chris says, this is a long one. I mentioned several weeks ago that I didn't really notice the replacement referees. I think it's fair to say that's not true of the real referees. I counted a questionable orange to Carranza for an elbow to Almada's face. It was definitely an elbow to the face. I didn't mind the yellow card, though. As well as Jose Martinez call on Bartek. Then there's the no call on Martinez' delay of game. Yeah, that was really weird when he threw the ball away. He forgot what happens if a throw-in doesn't touch anyone and goes back out of bounds, giving the Union a do-over. The yellow to Mbeumba didn't even look like a foul to me. The Union's go-ahead goal was called for offside for some reason. And then to blow the whistle to end the game during an attack? I thought that was only done to give Jude Bellingham a red card. Bellingham. To his credit, the equalizer was definitely a good goal. Harriel's heel was still on the line, but that's on the AR, not the center. I disagree. I don't think his heel was on the line. But again, it doesn't matter. It's not reviewable. Since I have felt that the presence of the referee has been far more noticeable since the PSRA officials came back. I'm pro-union, but the worst thing that could have happened to them was the replacements being better than they are. I know it's not a huge sample size, but I miss the replacements. Yeah, you know, I thought the replacements did a good job. Of course, these referees are infinitely better than Angel Hernandez in Major League Baseball, who every time he's behind the plate this season has just botched calls left and right. And really, the Major League Baseball and its unions have got to do something because you can't have umpires going back to how it was in the 80s and 90s where they all had their own strike zone, which makes no sense whatsoever. So the new referees here, not the new referees, but the referees who've come back for Major League Soccer aren't as bad as Angel Hernandez. But yeah, there were some questionable calls in the Atlanta United Philadelphia game. Chris continues, honestly, a great game from Atlanta, minus the boneheaded pass to no one that let Philly back in. Atlanta got the result that he expected, but it didn't feel like the result they deserved. Out of curiosity, who did Atlanta miss most this afternoon? My vote is Derek Williams. Cobb looked a little off, and I think the benching has really affected the morale of Abram, who is more sporadic than I'm used to seeing from. I thought they played well, but, you know, I'm not the center back guru by any stretch of the imagination. Who do they miss most? Yeah, Derek Williams is always a big miss, big communicator. I don't know if he would have been able to affect either goals allowed, but he continues, thanks for your time and dedication to reading these questions and all you do covering the 20 and 30 year olds who run around and affect our moods way more than they should. Well said, Chris. Thank you. On to Adam with the questions of the week. My mind is dizzy, he said, so I'm just going in random order. Philly's second goal came off a throw-in with a player clearly set over the line. We've covered that one. The stretch where Atlanta switched off, are they generally coached to do anything differently in such situations or stick to plan A? In my mind, they should have cut back on the risky passes in the defensive third and put more zeal into their clearances during these moments. Well, you heard Pineda say that they probably shouldn't have been pressing the goalkeeper after that first goal. So they're not really coached to do that. They just did it. It was, I think, a lack of experience. Just a little gusto, feeling good about themselves, feeling confident, which is better than a lack of confidence for sure. He says, I will praise Cobb and Abram for their overall performances as the team's three and four central defenders played well given the circumstances. Cobb seems ripe with potential. Yes, he is. He'll be in Europe. He's going to be a consistent player for the U.S. men's national team, I think. The more he starts, and I still would not be surprised if he doesn't at least get called into the Olympics. He's not a part of that group, but he's playing very, very well. And if I were the U.S. men's national team and its coach, I would want to bring some guys who might be there for the next Olympics just to get the experience. And Cobb would be one of at the top of my list, along with several other young players around Major League Soccer. You saw a couple with Philadelphia. Should Pineda have used another sub for fresh legs, say McCarty for Mayumba? Yeah, I mean, I covered that earlier. I think I was surprised McCarty didn't come in maybe around the 70th minute, but for whatever reason he didn't. Maybe we'll talk to Pineda about that on Tuesday. Adam continues, cheers for the coverage. Thank you very much. We'll be back on probably Friday morning, taping Thursday afternoon to preview the Cincinnati match. Cincinnati, of course, will come back in with Miles Robinson and his first return to Atlanta United since he signed with the Real Queen City as a free agent. Reminder to follow me on Twitter at Doug Robertson AJC and on Facebook at Atlanta United News Now. I'm now going to go play golf with my buddy Matt at Chesty and likely will not hit the ball straight at all. Please tell your friends about our show and please give us a rating and a review on Spotify and Apple. It's what helps us grow the podcast. As always, please hug your loved ones today. Try to communicate with them. Even if they're on the other side of the country, the world, just send them a text. Tell them you're thinking about them. It'll make their day. If you see somebody who might be struggling, try to be empathetic. Ask about them. Try to be aware. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.